Validate me, tiny crustacean. Hello and welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad Gaming Podcast, episode number 223. I am your host, James Gilmore, and joining me for this very special rumor-filled edition of the podcast, we have John Whispers in the Wind, Jordan.
Hello.
We have Peter Heard It on the Grapevine, Willington.
Hi.
And Keith Shouting It from the Rooftops, Andrew.
Is that a song?
I think a couple of them are. Actually, I think all of them are.
The other ones were. Well, yeah, I was waiting for the link.
But... yeah, that was actually not intentional in any way. That was just reflecting each person's unique character.
What? Yeah. I like to spy on people.
Yeah. Yes.
Wait, isn't that what the judge said?
We can't talk about
it. Wasn't
that
the word spy, but yeah.
Something like that. But I've seen you, Keith, out on the cobbles. Yeah, spy, disturbing the pigeons.
That's what he calls it as well. That's what Keith calls
it's
it.
It's slang. What are we doing here?
No, it's not slang. Look at all these people in the podcast booth this evening. How's about that?
I know.
This is a rare meeting of all four in the same place.
Well, kind of in the same place, yeah.
Well, yeah, in the same bit of bandwidth or whatever. We're ruining the illusion now. As far as they know, we're all sat around a poker table at the moment, looking each other square in the eye and delivering up-to-date opinions in the world of iOS.
Well, someone who did think that until we did one in a pub, and then they thought, oh, why are they making a fuss about being in the same room? Yeah.
Why are they all like, oh my God, I never knew you had hair, or whatever. It's just incredible.
Is that the kind of thing you say when you meet people?
Well, when you're me and you don't have any hair, yes, I have to live vicariously through other people's hair, so it gets me inordinately excited.
Okay.
So, what have we got coming up? We have the latest information about the most recent Vlambeer game that's been cloned. Keeps happening. There's another one. We'll tell you more in a moment. We've got the return of App Shopper and Weirdo Boyfriend Maker app, which Keith's going to tell us about because I don't really know much about it. And the latest rumors about the incoming iPhone 5S. All that and more coming up in the news. First up this week, we have the update, as always. The Sandbox, which is that pixel art god sim in which you build things in a blocky world, much like you do in Minecraft, but in a kind of 2D side perspective sort of thing. It's got a great big new update, which adds new musical instruments, because apparently that's a thing you do in the Sandbox, including the guitar, the bass, the drums, and a trumpet, which is, I suppose, a band. Yeah, that's a band. So you can make a band. There are new elements as well with which you can do experiments and build things. So that's got an insulator, a pump. Oh, and lasers. Most importantly of all, there are some lasers. So get stuck into that. There's also a new 10-level campaign entitled Lasers and Pipes. And the Dinosaurs and Pixel Art campaigns have an extra 5 levels each. That's free on iOS right now. Go download that. And also... Score Classic Goals, the game, not the order, has now got a load of new stuff, including a name change for some reason.
Classic Goals. I just got that. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah. Glad to have you with us today, Keith. Score Classic Goals is now called Score World Goals.
Score World Goals.
Yeah, presumably because the Classic Goals bracket was too limiting. I guess
that... it did sound a bit old-fashioned, doesn't it? Like classic rock. Like...
Classic.
No, thanks.
Score only goals that were scored in the 1950s. Anything else? No. So yeah, they've opened it up a little bit, and it's now world goals.
What makes a world goal?
It happens somewhere in the world.
Oh, okay.
What makes a classic goal?
It's a classic. I don't know.
isn't
it's in black and white, and everyone runs slightly faster.
Isn't it ultimately that the ball goes in the back of the net? Like, I don't really know what a classic goal is.
That's just a knock, though, isn't it?
What?
That's just a goal. If it's a classic, you have to get backwards whilst doing a handstand.
They were more memorable goals for whatever reason, like comebacks or in classic matches, or they were goals that you could actually remember.
Mm. All right, and they happened in the world. Well, now apparently one of the issues they had with the first game, or one of the few complaints, because it was pretty highly regarded, was that it was occasionally difficult to work out what you were supposed to do to get the ball in the net, what the perfect kind of maneuver was in order to pull off the ideal shot. And now there is a kick hints system, which gives you little tips and demonstrates how to get the ball in the back of the net. So they've added a cheat mode, basically, which tells you how to play the game. But more excitingly, there are now an additional 200 goals from all around the world, which you can master and or purchase. Don't know how many of those are actually free, or whether it's just 200 goals and you have to pay for them all. Doesn't say. Either way, you can download the update right now. And we gave it a PG Gold Award when we reviewed it and said it was really good fun.
That's good.
You liked this, didn't you, Keith? Yeah,
I do. Yeah, I do like it. It's very well presented, all kind of like in a almost like headline newspaper style. And
oh yeah, that's right.
It was very slick. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not really sure about the name change, because the first one, I seem to remember, unless I'm wrong, came out in time for the Euros, and most of the goals as a result were kind of like international goals, which sounds to me like world goals anyway.
Its original success was mainly in the UK, so I imagine it's an effort to kind of look at kind of Latin American places like that.
Broaden the appeal. In the soccer mouth or something.
They won't go that far. They mentioned the word soccer. That's a bridge too far, I think you'll find. Right, let's talk about iPhone rumors. It's that special time of year again, when everyone starts sharing hearsay, starts going...
It's been quite a while since we've... We would talk about iPhone or iPad rumors every week.
Well, I'll say, it's that time. We're getting towards the summer now, and it's inching ever closer. And now the first rumors have started to surface, and everyone starts to do a little bit of behind-the-hand chatter-chatter. Oh, it's gonna run on diamonds and radiation and all that. Probably 0.5% of it all is true. However, it's quite fun to talk about it, so we're going to. Probably the most interesting of all the rumoury things is relating to the appearance of a new prototype, or should we say alleged prototype. There's a photo that appeared on GSM Arena from one of their tipsters. It claims to be a picture of the new iPhone 5S chassis, both the front and the back of it. You can see the photos if it's up on the site, and there's also a link that goes back to the original article, if you want. It looks like one of the fourth generation iPod Nanos. Remember them?
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen the pic yet, it's like the instead of being a flat surface, a flat rectangle front and back, it's like the whole surface is curved, both front and back. The suggestion is that the screen goes all the way to the edge. Is that what am I reading that right?
I can never understand with these leaked shots why they don't take a better photo.
I know. All the leaked shots, suspiciously, all the autofocuses seem to break the moment before they take the shot.
It's on some dodgy table with a coffee ring mark on it and stuff. Yeah. You'd take the best shot you could ever take of something, wouldn't you? If you had any kind of iPhone prototype, you would take an you'd take 200 shots.
Yes.
Or something. It's like, these are the best ones. I mean, it looks a bit, it almost looks a bit Nokia-ish, the back of it. The way it's slightly curved.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
I wouldn't want a phone. I always say this, the same when people with the iPad rumors. I wouldn't want one that goes to the edge of the screen unless they invent some way of making it recognize when you're actually intentionally touching the end of the screen and just holding it.
Yeah.
It's just going to be madness. You're just going to end up touching things all the time you don't want to touch. You know?
Story of my life. you're right, because you end up like, they had the problems on the HTC ones, didn't they, where the screen kind of went right to the edge almost, but poor build quality led to kind of the edge of the screen breaking away from the surface and stuff like that. So it seems fraught with peril, the whole
thing. It's one of those, literally every time those prototype videos come out for one of the two and people put them on their Facebook and there's people lining them up screen to screen, so you make a massive screen. And I always say, well, it would be so impractical. You'd just be constantly hitting things you didn't want to touch. Mm.
Well, I've got suspicions about this photo because it looks Photoshopped to me. And we've seen a lot of these now, these Photoshop versions, and this looks like one of them. The shadow going around the edge of it looks dodge. I'm very suspicious. What I reckon has happened, if I had to guess, is an image of the prototype was leaked when they filed for a patent. So there was a schematic image of the iPhone 5S or a potential case for the iPhone 5S filed. So we've got a little drawing document of it, and it just looks like someone's seen that and then tried to realize it in Photoshop to me.
It's not convincing me.
And where's the home button?
No home button.
No home button.
So yeah, it's all...
Everything we're going to talk about over the next 5 minutes, clearly rumors and probably not true.
I hope though that it's indicative of them doing something slightly original with the design of it.
It would be more fun if it was not just the same thing, only a bit longer or a bit slimmer or a bit bigger.
It's quite early for the phone to, because you presume they're going to stick to an autumn. It's the iPad that's due the refresh now, isn't it? If you assume like an annual refresh.
They did kind of interrupt that, though, didn't they, with the fourth one kind of popped in.
That was because iPad 3 was a bunch of crap, wasn't it? I mean, everyone knew. It's pretty, But in general, it's a spring. Because in particular with the phone, you want to do it when 2 year contract's up.
Well, they're talking about it. In fact, the date when it's due. Apparently, there was rumours of it launching, or at least being unveiled in like June, July, that kind of time, in advance of an autumn launch or something. A dude from Citigroup, the guy's called Glenn Young, was talking on CNET and reckoned that it's going to be delayed, possibly until September, because of quote volume production issues. They didn't specify any more than that, but a report on Reuters cited that it's because of a fingerprint sensor that they are introducing onto it. And they're having difficulties finding a coating for the phone that doesn't interfere with the fingerprint sensor. So says Reuters.
I hate all those stupid things.
I've seen the biometric stuff on some laptops, and it's usually a little kind of metal square, isn't it, that they use it.
But... they've had them on phones in Japan for like... decades.
Yeah, it's not like new technology.
It's not new technology at all. No.
Is it really of that much use? I mean,
they'll call it something like iFinger or something, and they'll brand it. And I hope they're mad about it.
I hope they do.
Has your phone got iFinger?
I've got one on my laptop, and I switched it off because it doesn't work. It's crap.
Yeah, I've seen them, but never used them.
I just
unlock it with a code or a swipe or something. It seems.
You have to just place your eyeball on the screen.
Exactly. Yes, the retinal scan, and if it's not you, then it blows up.
Actually, retinal scans are much better than fingerprints. 7% of the population don't have a fingerprint, but retinal scans are pretty good.
Well, doesn't one of the Nexuses, when you look at it, it unlocks because it knows you're looking at it or something?
Yeah, but that's not retina scanning.
It's face, isn't it?
It does that, and also if you're watching YouTube and you look away, it'll pause.
See, that's the kind of thing Apple would have given a brand name and would have gone to town on.
Well, I think actually that's largely what I'm interested in, what the new iPhone does. I don't really care what it looks like. I just want them to do something that isn't what iOS looks like right now, because it's starting to look really old. Like, I'm quite happy with the function, like with the form. Like, I'm okay with that. I don't really mind what that does. But if you're looking at like Windows phones and like what Android's doing at the moment, it's just absolutely like
everyone got
Apple's ass.
I don't know. I mean, I would kind of agree with that. But I kind of think the biggest, while software is kind of the obvious place for them to innovate, I actually think now you just look around and the iPhone is the smallest of all the smart screen devices that are high end. I mean, it looks so small now. It's almost, I mean, pathetic is the wrong word, but it just looks wrong. I was actually traveling around Europe this week, and you just see these people, and they've got galaxies, and they just look, that looks like the size of a phone now. Even the Note doesn't look out of size. If you have a Note, it looks a bit big, but people with iPhone just go, ooh, look at those tiny little hands.
It does look dinky. You're right. The S3 was big enough, and then the S4 is even bigger.
People got excited this week because of the icon for Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference was revealed, and it looks different.
So it does look different, actually. Yeah.
Seeing this as a change, because this will be the first time that all the UI stuff is done by, what's he called, the English guy,
John Snipes.
Oh, they kicked the other fella out, didn't they?
Yeah, so they think it's going to, even if it's just how it looks, it's going to look different. Less of all that shady nonsense.
Well, speaking of aesthetics, the iPhone and iPad has been one of the devices that has always remained only two color schemes. So you had the black or you had the white. whereas the iPods have had many, many all colours of the rainbow. The other thing Citigroup reckons is that they're going to introduce a whole bunch of colour schemes. So it's going to go all kind of Lumia and have bright.
So Nokia, that, honestly.
Yeah, well, it is. It's true. It's the Nokias have got those.
If I can't get a Snap-on ones. One that's got Britney Spears on the back from a dodgy man at a market stall, then I'm not interested.
I'm sure they'll still account for that. There'll still be the ability to cover it up in a god-awful, gaudy-looking case. And you can bejazzle it or whatever. That's what people do, isn't it?
Bejazzle? Yeah.
So they're expecting more colours. That's one of the rumours. The other thing the rumours article reckons is there's going to be a light version, a cheaper, more plasticky, more affordable version of the iPhone.
No, not a chance.
This just keeps going on and on. I mean, they have it already, because you can still buy the 3GS. I think we still can, but you know, you just have the old versions that they just manufactured. I mean, it would be absolute suicide for a company that trades on being a premier, you know, premier hardware company, just to have some sort of crappy version that people. I mean, it would be absolutely bonkers. Their share price is down like 43% on its peak. I mean, that would just crater it if suddenly you go. You know, and it's because it kind of makes sense that you kind of go, there's lots of people who can't afford an iPhone, but they can afford it, you know, if they're just not the latest one.
You risk devaluing the brand, but this is a similar sort of discussion we had about the iPad mini. It didn't make it out of plastic or anything, but the idea of it being a smaller unit and less powerful and all that, devalue the iPad, and they made that.
The interesting thing about the mini, though, is that speaking to people, and you see a lot of them at conferences, actually. You see often more of them than the big ones now. Mm-hmm. That people prefer the size. So it's almost, even though it's technically cheaper and the screen isn't quite there, some people actually see it as a bit of an upgrade. I think if you did to make the iPhone cheaper with a separate model, I don't know what you'd do. You can't make it smaller. You'd make it out of wood or something. I don't know.
Well, they're talking about it being a sort of plastic chassis, wouldn't have the fingerprint tech.
I don't know why you do that, because like John says, you just, you know, people are going to be buying the 4S's and the 5's and the 4's if they could still get them for a long time. They don't need to purposely cater for that market. They can just use what's already out there.
Well, you mentioned the iPad minis, and you say you're seeing more of them. This Citigroup fellow, Mr. Jung, he states that flattening production of the existing iPad mini and, quote, softening demand make the future of the mini look a little bit iffy. Apparently it's not selling like they thought it would.
Yeah, I don't think it's blown anyone away. But their reluctance to split the figures anyway.
Between iPad and iPad mini.
If it had flown, that would have been in a press release. Mm. They'd have separated. I mean, they don't really talk about iPod sales anymore for that reason, because no one buys them. So I think, yeah, it's not flowing. I suppose maybe I'm thinking of the audience of people who go to conferences that we go to, like, sit there and they have their little keyboard holders for them, they sit in, and they, you know, they're a little special market. They're not
a select crowd, yeah.
But I don't think it's in danger, because I think it does. I bet you there are people there out who have both the 10-inch and the 7-inch. There are people out there who already have an iPad, who would have gone and bought one when it came out, because it's in another thing. I don't think they'll. I mean, certainly the one, if I was going to get one, I'd get a 7-inch.
No, I like the idea of the form factor, it's true, but I think people wanted to wait until they did a more powerful version with Retina screen.
Better screen, yeah.
Well, as well as relying on what Reuters and that lot has to say about the new iPhone.
Reuters,
whatever.
It's not a Wi-Fi router. It's got an EU. Not OU.
Is that officially an OI sound, then?
Reuters, yeah.
EU is OI. OI.
Well, I don't know. That's how you say Reuters.
Fair enough. All right, then. I stand corrected. Reuters, all their suggestions about what the iPhone's going to be. We thought we'd ask you, yes, you, the Pocket Gamer audience, what would you actually like to see in the new iPhone 5S? Peter, I believe we've got some responses.
We've got about a million responses, but
oh, really?
I'll only read a few. So we've got Achilles, who says, not exactly a feature, but would like better battery life, less fragile design, and less overheating.
Yeah, I think all good things. Well, that was the iPad 3 was the one that kept overheating a bunch, didn't it?
Ridiculous. But even my 4S gets a bit warm when it's playing games as well, actually, which is quite good in my cold flat. But Mike Dodger Stout says, Mark Aller's red in mail. Been waiting for that since 2007. Can't you do that? I thought you could do that already.
Do what? Sorry?
Mark all as red.
Oh, what, on iPhone?
Yeah, on iPhone.
I don't know. I don't look at my email on iPhone. It's horrible.
I think... Do you not... Oh, okay.
I don't look at email on iPhone either. On iPad. No.
Well, I've got Galaxy, so I don't do that either. We'll take his word for it.
Yeah, we're going to have to, aren't we? Bhavik Jane says, a sapphire screen to make it totally unbreakable and unscratchable. And NFC with wireless charging.
Wireless charging, yeah, that'd be cool.
Now, wireless charging, one, I don't understand how that works. Two...
Because you understand how it works, that's what makes it some way...
I don't think it's real. It's like, you know, people keep saying like, oh, 3D printers. I don't actually think they're real. They can't be. I don't understand.
I have wireless charging in my flat.
What do you wirelessly charge?
Oh, I used to wirelessly charge when I used it, my touchpad.
Oh, right, yeah.
So, it's all about isn't it, as I understand it.
It's agitating modicum.
Do you not have it for your... Do you not have it for your Windows phone, Keith?
I could do, but it's £60. Send me one. I'm not going to do it. I did want. You can get a nice cushion, fat boy cushion for it that it sits in. I don't know, but I mean that they make that. I don't think that'll happen because it makes the phone heavier because the battery has to be a kind of slightly bulkier thing. I understood it works. It does not work like the toothbrush chargers in that it kind of sends little mini vibrations through that charge the battery. They are real. I don't.
Well, okay, I don't think that'll be coming then. Zach Kinnean wants a better notification tray. I think we all want that. at Markatansky wants Android Jelly Bean.
Markansky, we know him. He's troll-lolling, isn't he?
Not happy. No. Not happy with this week's answers. PG Community Super Member Cloud says 2 gigs of RAM. I don't know how RAM works. Maybe that's not real. a much longer battery and an improved camera, especially in low lights. I'm with you on the camera, I think, actually.
It needs the Lumia camera, essentially. Essentially, what these people want is
Well, no, because George Osborne wants a bacon dispenser.
Is that our Chancellor of the Exchequer?
Yes, our Chancellor of the Exchequer would like a built-in bacon dispenser.
Because he's Jewish, he probably doesn't want bacon.
The final one, I think, comes from Deputy Editor Mark Brown, who obviously chimes in with something sensible and says, a petting zoo. A petting zoo in the iPhone 5S? Probably. Is it definitely going to be the 5S? Is it not going
to
be...
I was just about to ask that.
Is it going to be the 6?
Everyone's saying that the 6 won't be coming this year. That's what people are saying. Who knows? But that's the route.
Is that what people are saying? Who knows? Well, that's what people are saying. Who knows? It could go either way, couldn't it?
Now, the people who are apparently in the know are saying that, but you know,
what are the voices in your head saying, John?
They're saying kill them all.
Same as usual, then. Oh, good stuff. Yeah. Okay, thanks for those responses. I'd like the wireless charging thing on everything, but I'd like wires to disappear altogether. I do a lot of stuff with like music and wires, the bane of my existence. So yes, a wireless future is what I'm looking forward to. I just stand near things and receive information. Well, I suspect this is the beginning of months and months of salacious speculation, all of which will probably amount to nothing. But we're going to keep talking about it anyway.
My rumour is they're not going to make any more iPhones or iPads. So.
That's your one. Shall we start here? You've heard it here first. No more iPads. What are they going to do instead?
Kitchen implements, and they're going to call them cooks.
The iFork.
Cooks kitchen implements. That's what they call them.
Excellent. Let's talk about Vlambeer. Poor old Vlambeer, who seem to be too popular for their own good. They've had a long history of making good games, which people then, let's say, draw inspiration from and make games that are very, very similar to them. For example, Ridiculous Fishing, I think it was called Radical Fishing or something, when it was a Flash game, that got copied by another company and got released as, oh god, what was it even called?
Ninja Fishing,
wasn't it? Yeah. Ninja Fishing. Well, now we've got the latest in the clone saga. Vlambeer made a game called Luftrausers, which was another flash game in which you're sort of flying planes around the skies over waters, blasting enemy fighters. It's kind of a monochromatic thing, so it's all in a pale blue colour, quite distinctive looking art style. People really liked it, flash game fun, but they're not making it for iOS, they're not porting it over. This week we spotted Skyfar, which is an app that was created by a company that certainly isn't Vlambeer, and oh my, it does look quite similar, like really quite similar, to the point where it's pretty much identical. We reported on it, but Vlambeer hadn't heard about it. On the day that we put the article up, we saw tweets from Ishmael from Vlambeer going, oh god, no, what's this? I've just heard about something, but I'm not connected to the internet. I can't follow up on it. They piped up at a later date and said this time they've got slightly more grounds to take legal action, apparently, because not only did they take the idea, the concept of the game and the gameplay, they've robbed the visual style. And apparently, in the old courts of law, visual style is easier to claim against than if someone takes your concept. You can't apparently trademark or claim ownership entirely of a gameplay mechanic as easily as you can claim ownership of an aesthetic. So the fact that Skyfar's robbed the visual style makes it much easier for Vlambeer to prosecute.
Yeah, believe that when I see it.
You don't reckon it will come to anything? I mean, obviously this seems to keep happening to this company specifically, but
well, I mean, I don't know. From what I've seen, the other guys have come back and said, well, you know, it's not. Well, you could say it's a coincidence or not that they come out quite similar. I mean, it's not, if you're going to say we're going to design a very simple air combat game, I mean, it's not like Ridiculous Fishing that was such a complicated, weird concept that clearly two people wouldn't come up with something like that. It's just basically like, it's like Asteroids, but kind of with a crazy style. I mean, it's not, you know, there's nothing particularly original, and there's been other games that have used that kind of style before. Normally, when a lawsuit can be brought, it's because you can look at specific code samples that are exactly the same or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You do have that, but I mean, just for an art style thing, just plus the fact that, as far as I can see, the other company are Indian, so how on earth are they going to sue? Is a Dutch company going to sue an Indian company? I mean, this has never, ever happened. Plus, Vlambeer haven't got any money. Plus, the Indian company haven't got any money. I mean, you know, it's just not ever going to happen. And there is a kind of a wider issue, that, and I think it's, you know, a little bit with these kind of indie guys who just like, oh, you know, these our games are like our kind of like little babies, and how can anyone copy a little, you know? It's kind of like, well, they've made a game. They say they're not putting it on mobile devices because they can't do the control system. So it's a bit, you could argue, a bit like Gameloft, you know. But if Bungie aren't putting Halo on mobile platforms, then why people like playing Halo? Why might they not like a version of that on mobile devices? So, you know, it's not, you can't, not because someone says, oh, we own this concept and we're not going to do it. No one else in the world can do it. And certainly in places like India and China, they would just go, well, it's an opportunity. We, you know, if we do it and we know we can make £500,000, then just because some Dutch people are going to get a bit annoyed with us, I mean, go stick your finger in a dike, you know.
Don't fear the Dutch. Well, what can they do over there?
And this is a big global thing. So, I mean, we just had like a kind of a short conference in Helsinki a couple of days ago, and we had one of the guys from, it's a big Chinese company called Coco China, who's a big publisher over there, and he was pointing out that even if developers haven't released their game in China, the Chinese market is such that someone will have taken it off the App Store, reverse engineered it. If you haven't localized it, they will have localized it all into Chinese. Including sometimes they go in and they rip out the SDKs, so the kind of the ad networks and stuff, and they put in their own local SDKs and their own bank account. I mean, they completely reverse engineer the game.
How ingenious!
Yeah, and it is, and it's because partly in China there's not, you know, they don't have kind of copyright law like, you know, like the West has kind of grown up on. They just kind of see, well, people really like this game and it's not out in China. They don't see it as stealing at all. And in some degree, some things I've heard, people have actually kind of thought they were doing the original developer a favour by going, well, you haven't released your game in China, we'll do it for you, kind of thing. You know,
I assume they gave money to the developer.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to make money in China. But I'm just saying, it's culturally, it's a very, very different kind of situation when you start looking at these emerging markets. And sure. I kind of think Vlambeer are kind of, you know, from what I'm sure they're lovely people and stuff, but the Dutch tend to come from a very, design is what we do, and if anyone infringes on our design, then that's our whole livelihood, and that's not how most of the world works.
I will say that obviously the idea of a 2D plane shooter is not new. Obviously, yeah. That's, you know, that's been going back to, I used to play biplanes on the Amiga. Mm. And yeah, it's just flying around 2D in the air, shooting stuff. However, in this instance, I will say that Skyfar is a pretty blatant ripoff of the visuals, certainly. Like, the way that the water is drawn, the way the clouds are drawn, the design of the aircraft, the way it moves, the, even down to the bullets they're firing and the sounds they make, it's a pretty much identical lift. Mm. So if they just made a 2D, you know, aircraft fighter, then I doubt we'd be having the conversation. But to like copy paste it to this degree is quite striking.
The other interesting thing is when they spoke to us, they said they'd played it and it's absolutely terrible. And while you've been talking, I've been watching the Vamblier's trailer of their game, and then some, because the trailer from Skyfar has mysteriously disappeared from YouTube.
Oh, really?
There's a video of someone playing it. Mm. And it does look pretty awful, actually. The plane is flying up to the edge of the levels and then bouncing off, and there's no other plane to shoot down. It does look like a poor imitation. But I think the thing is that Vlambeer have a lot of people have a lot of love for them, and so when something like this happens, people kind of rush to their defense.
It's strange that sort of it's kind of two sided, isn't it? Like, When you've got an independent developer and they're ripping off wholesale, you know, game mechanics and game aesthetics from other series. So, for example, like, I can't think of one on iOS at the moment, but like Guacamelee's just come out on Vita, for example. And that's basically ripped loads of stuff off of Metroid. But because it's independent, everyone's like, oh, yeah, that's fine. But if Nintendo were to do exactly the same thing, people would be absolutely up in arms. And there is a bit, it's a little bit, I find it a little bit hypocritical, this whole thing, because, like, the gaming history has just been one long series of people copying one another. Like, this, it's an industry that evolves. It's made up of evolution. It's not made up of revolutions. So to sort of, to get so angry about the whole thing, like, and as you say, like, you know, they're not, it's not a market that they're going to take advantage of, and I'm fairly confident that the Vita version that they're planning on doing isn't going to be taking up the sales. You know, it's not going to be affected by the fact that this other, you know, Skyfar version is out. Like, it seems really hypocritical sometimes.
I think the flip side of this, and I can't say this with any confidence because it may not be true at all, is that they do get a lot of PR when these things happen.
Mm.
And people then, if they ever do suddenly decide to say, oh, we'll do an iOS version, there'll be a certain pocket of people who leap on the day it comes out because, you know, it's like rushing to their defense.
Well, we'll see if anything does come of it, legally speaking. Probably not, if we're to believe John. But I just want to wait for the next Vlambeer game to come out so that we can start, you know, retroactively taking it to pieces and making our own version. Actually, I want to talk about this, but I'd actually like Keith to give us the skinny on this, because there's two things that have appeared back on the App Store after long periods of not being there. One of them is the App Shopper app, which reappeared after being absent for 5 months. Apparently, for violating Apple's rules, specifically Regulation 2.25, which has become somewhat infamous now, to do with you're not allowed to make apps which act like an app store within Apple's own ecosystem. The other one is, well, a slightly different app, which I'll probably let you talk about, because frankly, I don't know a great deal about it.
Have you not played it, honestly?
No, weirdly, I haven't played it. I saw some of the fuss when it came out. What are we talking about, Keith?
Talking about Boyfriend Maker, who, when it was out, it was about six... Is it, how many months ago is it now? It was before the end of last year.
Yeah.
Generated quite a lot of fuss on the web before any of the scandals came out, because it has in it... It's a virtual dating app that was supposedly aimed at children, or at least the young, that allowed them, as well as buying clothes and stuff for this virtual boyfriend that they could court, they could go into a little chat room and chat with what was a chatbot lifted from another app. The problem was that people went mad about it because it would deliver some incredibly funny results. The replies often made no sense whatsoever, and there was blogs and stuff went up about it, and people were, you know, capturing what it said. And then it all got a little bit serious because some of the things it was saying were highly inappropriate, especially if you were 4 years old, which, you know, that's what it was, 4+. And so it got pulled. Because it turned out that the chat app it was using, the API it was plugged into, allows users to suggest responses. So it's quite it's quite a clever idea in the people behind the actual chat thing, and of which there is a web version where you talk to this big yellow splodgy thing. You could suggest what it should say if certain words come up. So the idea is that it learns, you know.
Like the Terminator.
Totally reliant on the people teaching it, using it responsibly, which of course they didn't. And so it started saying all kinds of horrible things.
Specifically, we heard talk of obviously sexually explicit responses and violent ones as well.
Yeah, it was all a bit, without getting too, it was talking about things with underage kids and stuff like that. It was it was the kind of thing that Apple would not have liked. And then suddenly, you know, there was a bit of, we got tipped off about it, and there was a bit of a web fuss that went off about it, and it got pulled, we presume, because of that, although no one ever actually came out and said anything, because the developer, I can't remember if they were Japanese. So no one kind of said anything, and now it's reappeared, albeit under a different name and in a kind of different guise, really. It kind of, if such a thing can be, it's a lot better now, it's a lot slicker. And whereas you used to have to pay, the energy of your boyfriend would sap the longer you spoke to him, and you'd have to either wait Freeman style to talk to him again, or you can pay. Now his energy doesn't drain unless you say rude things. So if you try and court him into saying something dodgy, and you do that 3 or 4 times in a row, I can't remember how many times it is, you drain his energy and you can't talk to him again for a while. So and also there's a sensitive soul. Well, and you can report if he comes up with anything, you know, irresponsible, and it gets wiped immediately, and not just from yours, but from everyone else's as well, in, you know, living in the cloud and all that. So they've you know, completely, and it's aimed at 12 years old plus now. I think it's still quite young. But,
for a virtual boyfriend, maybe.
Yeah, well, he's so hard. He barely looks like a boy, to be honest. He's got
one of those porcelain anime faces that looks.
He's got girls' eyes. He's all a bit weird.
Well, no, I mean, obviously, we probably don't know, but there's a long history in Japan of doing these kind of boyfriend simulator games, even from days of PlayStation. And
I shouldn't think they even thought it was controversial, did they?
No, tame
for them. But yeah, so now it's reappeared, and it appears to have learnt its ways. In the same week, well, no, the week after, isn't it, that App Shopper has reappeared with this new social element.
Yeah, that's right. So App Shopper, which disappeared, and it's now back with this apparent social slant. So firstly, it's missing a few things. So the What's New category and the top 200 features, they're gone. They're saying they might try and add them later on in a future update, but at the moment, no show. However, they've got some added things. So you've got the social discovery element, which is apparently designed to work with the App Store rather than against it. The idea being that you can subscribe to channels. I know that's one feature. So you can subscribe to feeds that are provided by particular websites, and they can recommend things too. But the idea is that you recommend them to each other, and you can share them with other people who follow you. And so it's all more of a community thing rather than a central hub dictating this is what you should be playing or looking at. And apparently that was okay by Apple, so they allowed it back on. Now, I understand that if you still have the old app, you can keep it.
Yeah.
I've got a game recommendation app on my iPhone. It's called the Pocket Gamer app.
We'll get banned.
We pulled any minute.
Any minute. Well, the last one it happened to was App Gratis, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was another app discovery's tool, and that got pulled a couple of months ago as well.
But you can understand why. You can understand why these people don't. Why Apple don't want these products on there, because Apple's got their own ways of promoting things. And if you're, you know, taking sort of an ad revenue away from Apple on their...
Why are you taking ad revenue away from it?
Why
was App Shopper taking ad revenue away from Apple?
So App Shopper sort of suggests apps, am I correct with that one?
The problem is, I don't think anyone would disagree that particularly the App Store, but in general, app stores in general are not very good apart from their big featured slots. I mean, they're not very good apart from that. So they have a very limited number of titles that they can promote during the year, considering how much is released. So by definition, there's a whole bunch of stuff that just clearly won't get promoted because there's just not enough slots for them to do it. So obviously, if you're sitting in that group of companies that just for whatever reason don't get your stuff promoted, and maybe because it's a lovely app, and if it was released a week later, it would get promoted. But unfortunately, EA is doing a big thing this week, so you know. So there's a kind of randomness anyway. So that's why that all these other things have sprung up, because there is, I mean, I think you're right, there is the money to be made kind of issue, but the basic problem is, I mean, there is no piece of software in the world I hate more. I mean, I use Windows, but here it's not any better on a Mac than iTunes. It's absolutely awful.
I concur with that. I hate iTunes.
And the reason that everyone knows is because it's built on decades old technology that no one can change anymore now. I mean, people say that it's like a bank system. No one wants to touch anything on there because no one's exactly sure how it works. So
it all falls to pieces.
You know, even when you search for games, when you put the correct name of a game in, it doesn't come up sometimes. I mean, this is, you know, fundamentally broken in lots of respects.
It's a victim of its own success as well, in the way that, like Pocket Gamer, when I first started reviewing stuff, we pretty much reviewed everything that came through, and you couldn't even hope to come close to doing that now. I mean, if Apple are saying, right, you can only use our discovery tools, then that is only going to affect about 0.01% of the apps that ever get launched, because there are just too many. And they might be angry that some of these companies, AppShop or AppGratis, whatever, are making money by giving developers other options. But there has to be other options, because otherwise no one but the people at the top, and it's increasingly resembling the old console market in that the people at the top are now kind of staying at the top, and the hits that used to somehow worm their way through are becoming fewer and fewer that I can see, because there's just so few opportunities now for you to get spotted.
Okay, yeah, but I'm sorry. I'm still not understanding this. Like, why does Apple have to say, oh, yeah, you can have that on our service? Like, is there a platform? I'm still not understanding why...
They don't have to, but if they don't, then developers will eventually realize, hang on, we can't get... I mean, this is already happening to a certain extent. I was speaking to a few developers recently who were going over to PS Vita, because
dire straits indeed.
because the competition, the audience may be comparatively minuscule, but the competition is smaller and the chance of them getting spotted is much higher. So their idea is that, you know, they might not get as many downloads potentially, but their chances of getting some downloads are much higher. But the problem with the App Store is that it's just impossible. I don't know how developers sleep at night when they launch on the App Store, especially if the App Store is the only one they launch on, because
But to a degree, Peter's point is right. I mean, if Apple just said literally that we are not going to allow any other apps that do anything that can promote apps, you know, I mean, it's all going to go through the App Store, I think, that would be fine. I think people would be a bit annoyed, because there's lots of kind of interesting stuff that would happen that wouldn't be able to do it. But the problem with Apple is, you know, certainly with the App Gratis guys will go, well, App Gratis has been removed, but free app a day or app a day or all these Dream app a day, or, you know, there's loads of things, you know, that do to a broad degree a similar job. And what tends to happen is the ones that are big, that get big or get some sort of traction, and everyone goes, they're gaming the system, but they get pulled not for being successful, they get pulled over clauses that would, if Apple, you know, universally said anyone that breaking this 2.25 clause, then that, you know, there would be like 50 apps would be pulled. You know, it wouldn't be one app. And I mean, Keith's actually just written quite a good piece about it. It's not really about whether people are breaking these rules. It's about the transparency that when stuff's removed, you don't know why. And all the, you know, and it's like Kremlin watching. I mean, it's always my whole point with Apple is they very, very rarely will do a public announcement on these things. And it will be, maybe they'll talk to someone someone from All About D will talk to their, oh, we know our Apple content. And it's all this kind of like rumors and it just seems, and I can understand the company culture and that's how it's grown up, but it kind of, you know, it creates this kind of rumor driven kind of situation where it's like, oh yeah, what is that photo, and you know, and the whole thing. I mean, in a sense, maybe it's great for journalism, maybe I shouldn't wish it to be any other way, but it just seems a little bit schoolboy. It seems like not a way to run a professional company, really. You know,
there's also an argument to say that these kind of apps, these other discovery apps, actually generate revenue, and for Apple, they promote other apps that they wouldn't otherwise do, and so they can, you know, push up the sales of apps that would otherwise be languishing at the bottom of the pile, getting no attention whatsoever.
Well, that'd be, I mean, there is the argument I think the argument about kind of app gratis is, if say a company used app gratis and got their app to number 10, if they hadn't have been there, then there would have been another app that would have been number 10 that got there for different reasons. I think that, but equally, you know, obviously Apple do big deals with people like Facebook because they integrate Facebook into their into the OS. So therefore, I mean, Facebook isn't in a sense kind of pushing things in the same way, but it's kind of, you know, the Facebook app will push things to generate rank in the apps in Apple's app store as well. So I mean, all these things are very murky. But
well, either way, you can now download the new app shopper if you like and get all social with it, and you can even have your new boyfriend, his boyfriend make it, but don't say anything nasty or naughty because then he'll sulk. Apparently
gets very tired.
He gets all tired. It's like, no, not tonight, I've got a headache.
And then he pops back up with a message, I've got energy again, come talk to me. I must remove him, actually.
So coy. All right,
I only downloaded him for work. It's nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing going on.
Yeah. All right. Well, you can have fun with your new boyfriend this week and other games as well. We've got some new releases coming up, so let's go and have a look at them right now. First up on this week's new releases is Iron Man 3. It's by Gameloft again, but it's not a fully 3D fly around the place flying game. It's an endless runner type flying game. It's very big, in file size at least. It's like a gig or something to download. And we've had a look at it, and we are not all that impressed.
No.
Graphically speaking, it looks very impressive, certainly in still shots. But when it's running, apparently there's a hell of a lot of stuttering and slowdown. The control is a bit dodgy. Mark describes it as like trying to guide an umbrella in a hurricane. But
if you were an Iron Man, you know, those rockets are pretty powerful. You'd be all over the show, wouldn't you?
He holds it together, doesn't he? He has to do heroic things. If he was constantly just flying to the side of a building, he'd be useless. So yeah, apparently his controls are a wee bit dodgy, and it's patched to the gills with in-app purchases, but you know, that's to be expected.
Did I not? I can't remember if I spoke about this on one of the podcasts before.
Don't think so.
I played this when I was at GDC.
Oh, maybe actually.
I've told someone.
You told me you played it.
Yeah, it wasn't. It isn't very. I couldn't get to grips with the controls because I can't remember what you do now, but you have to move him left and right by kind of almost doing the same control as when you're wanting to shoot or whatever. It was kind of a mess, and it was very juddery, but to be fair, I don't think that was the final build. But
Well, apparently the final build is itself juddery, and even running on the newer iPhones and iPads, frame rate takes a hit, and it's a bit of a it's free, so you can try it.
I don't like any of these 3D endless runners, to be honest. I haven't played.
So you're not a fan, are you? The Temple Run crowd. Well, we say, like, you can always try it, download it, it's free, but it is a gig, so be warned, it'll take a while and munch up some bandwidth. Another high-profile-ish release that just came out today, LEGO Batman DC Superheroes. The LEGO games have made a showing on iOS, particularly the Harry Potter series, years 1 through 4 and the other one. They turned up. This isn't a direct port of LEGO Batman 2, DC Superheroes, with which it shares most in common. It's a new adventure created for iOS. I imagine it hits a lot of the same beats and stuff. But it's different adventure. You've got even more of your heroes and enemies this time. There's 80 playable characters for you to get stuck into. So Aquaman, Flash, Superman, Poison Ivy, everybody you can really think of. And I've seen it running, haven't played it yet. It's £2.99 or $4.99. It looks pretty. I think we were kind of okay with the LEGO Harry Potter ones. Obviously it's not quite the same as when you were controlling them on a Vita or a 3DS, which is perhaps more ideal, but I understand they play quite well, and they're very well presented. The simple nature of them, they're always just collect-em-ups. It's just always about those studs, isn't it? Even the new one, even that Grand Theft Auto-style one, LEGO City Undercover, it's all about collecting studs.
It's LEGO, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So that's around $2.99, $4.99. You can go and grab that right now. The other big one, I suppose, is House of the Dead, Overkill - The Lost Reels, which is a big old title for what is essentially just a big zombie shoot 'em up that's in very, very, very poor taste. Who's played the original?
I've played that game.
Oh, right.
GDC. How was it in that poor taste?
Well, the original one, yeah.
No. Well, yeah. Why is it in the poor taste?
House that Overkill was done in a massively grindhouse style, and it was like, has the most swear words in any video game.
It actually holds the Guinness World Record.
Yeah.
I didn't play very much of it. I didn't hear any swearing. Okay. Well, maybe.
It's all just noise.
Sure with the sound, to be fair, I'm not even sure I played it with the sound up because it was in this kind of big demo room, so I can't remember. on rails shooter with lots of zombies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not a direct port or anything. It's kind of a greatest hits package of the two other versions. There was a PS3 version as well.
Does anybody say suffer like G did?
I couldn't tell you, Peter, but I really do hope so. So it's probably still naughty, because otherwise what's the point of these kind of things? We've got so many zombie shooters. That was the selling point of House of the Dead, was it was so ridiculously over the top that it was kind of entertaining.
I've got a virtual boyfriend who'll be rude to you if you want.
Yeah, but then he'll go all pouty on me, and I don't have the time for pouty. I don't like playing games.
Should have kept the old one on, really, shouldn't
you? Yeah, exactly. He likes it filthy. Yeah, so you can get hold of this for $2.99, $4.99 if you want. Apparently, though, the three levels are advertised in the App Store description, but if you actually want the final level, you have to pay an extra $1.49 or $1.99.
Brilliant.
Which is a little bit cheeky, so you have been warned. The initial outlay will only actually get you two levels, not three. Rude boys. Ravenous Games have released another one. This is the guys behind League of Evil, League of Evil 2, Infesta, and just Gravity Duck, and all those 2D wander-along side-scrolly retro shooters that they knock out at a rate of knots. The one they've got out now is Random Heroes 2. We really like the first one. I think it got a gold, actually. This one's out right now. We've listed it as 69p99. I thought it was free. I thought the first one was free. Hang on, I'm checking this with iTunes. I call shenanigans.
No, it's money.
Is it money?
It is money.
All right, fair enough. It's Swingers reference. Showing our age now, aren't we? It's a side-scroller thing where you play as lots and lots of random characters. There are 18 characters. We've seen, like, there's a nurse and there's someone who looks like She-Ra. It's showing my age again there. And just dudes with guns shooting everything. Aliens from other dimensions. You know the score. They're all very similar, these Ravenous Games games. But it's not such a bad thing because they're also generally quite good. They have some of the best controls for side-scrolling platformers on iOS, in my opinion.
They do.
So, you know, despite the fact they are all pretty similar, they're always fun to play. So fair play to them, says I. 69p99. Go and have your fill. Did anyone play Talisman, the Games Workshop board game?
Yes.
You did?
Yes, I did.
It took bloody ages, as I recall, to play a game of Talisman.
Talisman? No, it takes about 60 minutes, I think. This is the one where you have to go for the Crown of Command, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
It takes about an hour.
Okay, fair enough. Well, they've done a version for iOS. It's called Talisman Prologue HD, and it's available for £2.99 or $4.99. You have to get all the way around the edge of the board, wander around the circumference, defeating randomly generated foes as you go towards the center to get, as you say, the Crown of Command. Only the single-player campaign has been included in this initial download, hence why it's Prologue.
That's bewildering. That's bewildering.
Well, they're going to add the multiplayer later, you see, in an update, which may or may not cost money. So
that's the exciting part of it. Like, that, the rush from all of the players to get the Crown of Command to kill everybody else. Like, the dynamic, the way that the excitement of the actual game is everybody being on the same level, then gradually building and building and building until somebody gets the Crown of Command, at which point they are, like, god-tier player, and everybody is scrambling to try and figure out what else they can do. Like, that's the fun of it. It's not some play against the AI rubbish.
Well, playing against the AI is precisely what you'll be doing for 50 quests. So apparently it's quite sort of substantial. We had a hands-on with it. We're in the middle of reviewing it at the moment. Harry's not making the most positive noises, from what I'm hearing. But the preview.
Is that something to do with the game or just in general?
Yeah, that might be something he ate. But the preview, we said that, like, you know, they had a good hands-on with it for a long time, and they barely scratched the surface of these campaigns. So apparently it's a fairly decent amount of content. And like we say, the multiplayer version will be coming later. They'll add it on later as an update. Whether it takes off or not, I don't know. I'm not sure how strong Talisman's fan base still is after 30 years. It was 1984 it was released, so, you know, we're harking back a bit here. Either way, $2.99, $4.99, can get that right now. I suppose we should mention Draw Something too. There we go, I just mentioned it. I can't even draw up the slightest bit of interest or enthusiasm, I got to say.
Really?
No, well, I mean, I did get the first one and I played it a bit. Fair enough, it's Pictionary. Personally, I preferred, what's the one that begins with CH? I already had a Pictionary-style game, and I quite like playing that.
It was NGMoco did publish it, didn't they?
I think so, yeah. But I preferred whatever that was. I preferred it to Draw Something, so I tried them both and went, no, I'm sticking with this one. It was the biggest thing in the world for about a month or two, and then as soon as it got bought out by Zynga, it immediately started to drop the interest behind it. And now the sequel has popped up, and it's the same thing. But you can get a couple of new pens and pencils. There's a sparkly pencil you can get.
I think Zynga would suggest there's slightly more to it than that.
I wrote up the thing. I had a look at all their extra stats. There is a new sparkly pencil that you can get. Some more in-app purchases you can use. There is a social aspect that's been introduced.
I think that's the whole big thing. Isn't it like a big kind of, you can look at other people's pictures and much more kind of like user-generated social interaction.
Well, the idea is, yeah, you can post. Now when you draw your little picture and send it off to someone else to guess, you can post it to Facebook or Twitter. Bam. Mm. And you can add a little caption if you want. So that'll mean that you can inflict your scribbly drawings on everybody else, and apparently there will be kind of curated galleries that Omgapop or Zynga will moderate. And
but that kind of stuff is quite important. That's how people look to drive, you know, kind of usage, because they go, if you have like a celebrity playing it, or you have like this guy's the best at making these levels or something, then you drive everyone to that kind of content.
Mm.
So it's not, you know, it's not something to be, whether it works or not is a question, but the actual concept, and it's like we've seen with like Clash of Clans and bringing alliances in now and all that kind of stuff, you know, is that kind of how you have players who play it, and then how you connect them with other players who play it at a similar level is kind of where everyone's focusing on at the moment.
So you can get that now. There's a free version if you want, or you can get a premium one for £1.99, $2.99. That one comes with the sparkly pen. Either way, there's lots of extra stuff you can buy in the in-app purchase store, so, you know. Cool. Okay, that'll do for the new releases. We've all been playing things. Let's talk about those things we've been playing in the What We've Been Playing Things section.
What we've been playing!
Right, I understand that both Keith and John have been playing the same game this week. What game might that be, Keith and or John?
What have you been playing, Keith?
I thought you were going to say, we've been playing Fish Out of Water.
Ah, yes, the new one from Halfbrick, yeah?
The new one from Halfbrick.
Hmm. And what of it?
The new one from Halfbrick. yeah, it's a game with fishes. So you fling fishes, essentially, from one side of the screen and try to get them as far as you can to the other. So it's quite hard to explain, actually. So you pick them up with your finger and you fling them, and they bounce. Well, depending on the type of fish you fling, they all kind of react slightly differently, but essentially they kind of bounce off the top of the water for a certain, you know, it's like skimming stones, essentially. Mm. And they get certain distance. You get three fishes to fling each time, and it adds up. It kind of counts the number of times they bounce and how far they go. And then puts all three together into kind of the final score. And then you get in kind of Strictly Come Dancing style, a little board of crab judges who appear and give you a score. But quite interesting, then there's five of them, and they all look for different things. They've all got little personalities. There's a grumpy one at the end. But the other four, yeah. Kind of, one of them looks like, the, you know, is really interested in the number of times you bounce off the surface, and the other one just wants you to go as far as you can, blah, blah, blah. So you get this little score, and then it's kind of put into this final score, with the idea being that you join a group and add your friends, and, you know, see who's getting the high score each day. It's kind of I'm reluctant to talk too positively about it because I'm aware that in a similar, I mean, it's not the same game at all. Yes, they both involve fish, but I kind of slated Ridiculous Fishing for there not being a game there. In a kind of way, there isn't much of a game here, but there, I mean,
I disagree with that. There's strategy to it
in that the fishes all react differently. So one of them will. Like this kind of like almost like a big whale kind of one who bounces heavily off. Well, he's, you know, it's quite a small whale, I suppose, but he bounces off the top more. So you want to kind of fling him quite highly, whereas there's a kind of a dolphin and she goes underneath. And if you fling her too high, then she'll, as she returns to the water, she'll hit the ground and that'll stop her motion. So you kind of have to mix it up and think, well, which one, you know, how do I fling this one? How far do I go? And also, there's different weather in the game, and quite in a really kind of neat way, it gives you a little weather report in the top corner, with showing you what the weather is like now and showing you what's going to happen in a few hours, blah blah blah. So at the moment it's cloudy and sunny, and but at 8 o'clock it says it's going to be sunny. So that then changes the kind of physics of the game a little bit, as to how rough the water is and so forth, and even just the literal angle that you hit the wave at can completely either kind of almost slow your fish right down or send it flying back into the air and on you go. It's just one of those games that very cleverly gives you enough little carrots on the stick to you find yourself suddenly, I mean, it comes up with little stats and it says you have flung 120 fish, and I thought, I've only been on it for about 20 minutes or what seemed to be 20 minutes but obviously wasn't. Because you it gives you these little gems that you put together to make a bigger gem thing that then gives you a boost for the next fish you fling, and it's just very clever at keeping you on board, and you almost, even though you kind of think, well, what am I doing here, actually you don't want to put it down, and it's just incredibly cute in a non-sickly way and the fact that all these crabs have their own little personalities just really appealed to me.
It makes you laugh. The thing I've noticed about it, and I haven't played it yet, although I've seen a lot of coverage, is everyone seems to have difficulty describing it. It's not one of these games that you can just sum up as a concept.
As I just discovered, really. It's really quite simple, but I couldn't kind of describe it very well. But
everyone seems to be having the same issue.
It reeks of quality, really. It's people who know what they're doing. Right down to the level of just the design of these crabs, which I almost just want to... I mean, looking at them now, one of them's got his eyes bulging around, the other one looks very cynical. You know, they're looking around and blinking and stuff. You kind of just want to fling these fish just to see these crabs put their little scorecards up at the end.
Validate me, tiny crustacean.
Oh, yeah, and there's a little clamshell thing in the bottom who just comes out with these random... Some of them are facts about water and fish and stuff, and some of them are just really random comments. And the one that came up early was he suspected the orange crab of stealing his car radio the other week, which for some reason made me laugh.
Scandalous.
For about 5 minutes. Just thinking, who at Harfrick has come up with that and put that in as a random thing he says? But it's just, it's adorable. And just little attention to detail, things like the weather and...
The animation of them where they come to the end of their throws and they're like trying really hard to get a bit further. It's like the little dolphin like screws his eyes up and it's like, oh, he tries really hard, his tail starts wagging. So it really is quite impressive. I mean, the weird thing about it is, I mean, I spoke to the designer and he's a big surfer, so it started off as a skimming stone game. So it is all about, it's not about the fish so much, it's about the wave conditions and the waves. You sometimes get really big waves, and sometimes you get kind of ice, and sometimes you get volcanoes kind of like blowing hot air. So so there's quite a random element in there.
Right.
Because otherwise, if the weather was all the same, you just use the three fish that you kind of like the most. But to get the most out of different weather conditions, you have to use different fish. But because you don't get an accumulated score or anything, you just get purely like you throw three fish, then you get the score. I think that's kind of where it lets people down a bit. And the weird thing about it is because it's only 99 cents, then I think people kind of expect a bit more structure. Whereas if it was a free game, then I think that would be just like, oh, it's a free game, and you might play it like, you know, for me, I just like going to sit down in front of watching the news. I might give it like, might have 10 goes or something. Mm. But it's not something I go, oh, I want to beat my best score, because I got my best score was like 9.5 or something, and it was just kind of a bit random. It wasn't, I did, you don't really have control over it, which I think
that's what I was curious about. It sort of looks a little bit too random, maybe.
I think that's where, I mean, that's its success or failure will be the fact that, I mean, its success will be because anyone can play it and get quite a good score. And the you can only join one kind of leaderboard, and the leaderboards reset every week. So they're kind of, which is a big thing they do in Japan and Korea. So you have these leaderboards that reset every week. So everyone's kind of playing right on the Sunday to get the high score kind of thing. Mm. Even though you don't get anything for the high score, I don't think, at the moment. So I think they're playing around with kind of that kind of social kind of driving it rather than it being gameplay driven. So I think that's, I mean, clearly they Half-Brick completely know how to make brilliant games. And so they completely know where this game's strengths and where its weaknesses lie. But I was just quite surprised I think maybe they didn't want it free, because as soon as you make it free, you obviously increase the downloads 100 times maybe, but that's going to overwhelm the leaderboards. And so if you just charge 99p, then you're kind of controlling the leaderboard access a bit more, and you're doing that through a certain filter. So I think it's a kind of, I wouldn't say it's an experiment, but I know they've got a lot of games in development, so this is their biggest release of the year.
Okay, more to come from them, you think?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. All right, well, I'll briefly talk about what I've been playing. I've been playing Alien Breed.
We are back in time, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. Well, I tend to zip all over the map. And this is one I just hadn't got around to doing, which is weird because I was an Amiga kid and I'm a huge fan of the original. And perhaps that's what held me back in the first place. It was a notoriously difficult game that was loosely based on the Alien movies, although they couldn't ever say that. It clearly was based on the Alien movies. And it was a top-down single-stick shooter, because you only had one stick in them days. And you wandered about a derelict space station, blasting aliens and trying to scavenge keys in order to open doors and progress further through the levels. It was hard, really hard, but just great atmosphere and great music and a really good look. And despite the fact that it was ridiculously difficult, you kept coming back to it because it was just, I don't know, classy and one of the best Alien games ever made, which is even more impressive considering it's not actual Alien license. It was a really quality game. For the iOS version, they have offered two different types of play. You can play it old school. So it's got the original graphics. It's got a single stick on one side, virtual stick, obviously, on one side of the screen, and a fire button on the other. So kind of replicating the old joystick. Or you can play the updated version, which has prettier graphics, new sound effects, and it plays like a twin stick shooter. So one stick controls the gun, the other one you just move around with. I'm not really happy with either version, to be honest, because trying to play the old school version on a touchscreen if the original was hard when you had a proper joystick, it's ridiculous when you're trying to do it with a virtual joystick, because the whole concept of having the single stick is you have to be facing towards the aliens to shoot. So there's lots of running away, and at the very last minute, like switching back to face them and then pressing fire. That's what you used to do in order to shoot these guys. When you're trying to do that level of sensitivity and speed, trying to get that on a virtual joystick on your phone, it's not really happening. So it's kind of nightmarish to play it in that mode. Whereas if you switch to the other mode, it becomes way easier. Too easy, I would say. Because half of the fun of it was incredibly tough. And as soon as you introduce a twin stick mechanic where you can shoot in any direction and walk backwards while you're shooting, it completely changes the mechanics of the game. And it feels like something much more akin to a modern day twin stick shooter, which I imagine will appeal to more people. And it's far less kind of discouraging. I imagine if you're not used to that old school kind of very difficult gameplay and you just picked it up, you just throw it down in 10 minutes going, this is ridiculous. You'd rage quit. But by making it a twin stick shooter, I don't know, it loses something. And probably my biggest objection is the shop component of the game. So you would encounter stations around the levels where you could log in and you could access the shop. And whenever you logged in, it would go,
welcome to the Intech system.
And it doesn't do that anymore. You can access the shop from anywhere. You pause the game and it just brings up the shop. So the whole idea of you being stuck, you know, isolated in a corridor and you have to fight your way to the next shop just so you can buy another key or another item of energy, you just pause the game and you buy a health and you carry on, which is rubbish. And the girl doesn't say,
welcome to the Intech system,
in that cool way that she did. So for that reason alone, I was disappointed. But I don't think it suits the touchscreen that well. I understand it came to Vita, and I imagine it's great on the Vita. I'm just guessing. But on touchscreens, not that impressed, gotta be honest. Which leaves Peter for a change. Peter, what have you been playing this week?
So there's a guy called Ian Bogost.
Who?
Do you know him?
Yeah.
He's an academic. He's written books.
Yes, he has. He's written actual books about video games rather than just top 10 lists. And basically...
I think we've all just been slighted there.
Against Pocket Gamer, then. That's good.
The thing is, I like top 10 lists better than anybody else. But he is a smart man, and I think he's been to university. He talks a lot about video game theory and so forth. He's very interested in making persuasive games. In fact, he's got a studio called Persuasive Games. And so I thought, oh, this guy sounds interesting. I think I'll download one of his games. And I downloaded Simony, which is... So you fire it up, and the entire thing is in Latin. So clearly, again, the man is a smart man, and he knows dead languages, and he's put them into a video game, so I can't quite figure out what I'm meant to be doing next.
I feel some beard stroking coming on.
Oh, there's plenty of beard stroking coming on. And the game is about, I believe it's the Restoration, it might be the Renaissance, medieval, I don't know, olden days, and it's about how people either bought their way to power or were successful in their way to power, and about how those two factors would let, you know, one of them was much easier, but you would need sort of certain social standing to do that. And one was all done on your merits, and that was how you would move forward. And there were, you know, a lot less people doing a lot less incredible things at the time because the people with all the money were doing really well. It's a really interesting idea, and he makes the comparison between that and the freemium model, basically, where you can, as he describes it, like pay to win. And he's sort of saying that maybe there's now a, you know, something that we could perhaps mirror the two periods of human history, and we can say, you know, in the medieval times, people were getting power and succeeding by buying station, and then today people are buying in-app purchases to succeed on leaderboards that have no meaning.
That is deep.
Now the game itself,
I can say, what do you actually do?
So have you ever played the game Simon?
What Simon Says?
Yep. As in the red, yellow, blue, green thing.
Oh yes. Things. Sorry, yeah.
So that's the game.
Oh.
So.
And this is that game is a deep metaphor about the.
Well, you can so basically, if you're unsure of what the next sequence is, you can pay 69p to get a few I think they're called favors that basically mean that. The game does it for you, and you get to advance one more point.
Right.
So yeah, theoretically you could move up the high score table just by continually paying money. If you've got £1,000 and you fancy chucking that into an iTunes account, you could have the top score really easily. I guess that the two problems really with the game are that there's absolutely no substance to it other than what all of this sort of ephemera around it, like this it's almost like somebody in GCSE art has gone to a bin outside and put a load of glue on a piece of paper and then chucked the trash onto the piece of paper and then said, well, actually that's all about recycling. You know, it's almost as if he's made a game that's about, that isn't really about anything. It's just everything around it is the interesting bit. And it is genuinely interesting, that stuff on the outside. It's just that the inside is so boring. And I guess the other thing is that as something that's trying to sort of say something about society, he doesn't quite take into account things like hacking, for example. Like, there isn't, you know, if I was a naughty individual, I could, you know, I could jailbreak my iPhone, I could download an illegal version of the game, and I could quite easily get the high score of the game, and the meaning and the message behind simony would be completely lost because I've circumvented it. So I guess I kind of find myself thinking, none of this really works on any level, but it's a really interesting attempt.
You know what it sounds like to me? It's making me think of Curiosity.
Yeah. I mean, so I kind of jumped back into Curiosity recently as well.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, like I'm getting more and more interested in games that are trying to tell stories and trying to challenge ideas and sort of social norms. And I think that both of the games are really fascinating attempts at that. It's just that I suppose they don't quite succeed, and that's a real shame. But it's definitely worth seeing. Apart from anything, because when it says this game features in-app purchases, and then you're trying to read text, and it's all in Latin, and I'm like, am I spending money by pressing this button? I've no idea. Like, it's a little bit terrifying when you're linked up to your sort of iTunes account. You've got money in there. You're like, oh, is this going to give me favors for a game I don't really give a toss about? Well, so. You know, you can pay for favors.
Odd choice, yeah.
I think it's favores. I don't know, mate. It's all in Latin. So you know, but it's interesting. It's a really, really interesting game, if not a very good one. But it's free, so you should probably check it out.
Okay. The Emperor may have no clothes, but you can put him on your phone for nothing. Alternatively, check out Fish Out of Water, because apparently it's fun, but we're not really necessarily sure why. Yeah. But could be quite fun. I'll have a look. I'm up for it. I'll fling a whale and see what happens. You know, I've got nothing going on this evening. Might as well. Which, of course, brings us to the end of the podcast. Everything we've talked about today is up on the site, including the app of the week, or whatever it's called. Go and have a look at that. Vote for your favourite app and tell us what you think. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, as always. And we will be back next week for more conversational shenanigans about the iOS. Thanks, everybody, for joining me, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.